With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
I feel as though I need to calm down some, but I'm not really sure how to do it. It's one of those nights on the air when I'm all jazzed up and psyched about the storylines and about what's to come. The Stanley Cup Final between the Golden Knights and the Capitals beginning in Las Vegas on Monday. So Memorial Day is a holiday to remember for more reasons than one. It's good that the Capitals will have these extra days. Now, I don't know how that affects the Golden Knights. At this point, everybody's got bumps and bruises, even though the Capitals have played more games than the Golden Knights. And so it's an extra few days off for them. But the Caps, who not only just wrapped up a physical back-to-back stretch here in Game 6 and 7 and had to play through to the very end, they're also the team that has to travel. And so it's good for them that they don't start until Monday. I think this is a winner for NBC. I think it's a winner for fans, of course, but I think it's going to be a winner for NBC that they get two major markets in Las Vegas as well as Washington, D.C., and they get these incredible paths to the Stanley Cup Final. And producer Tom put up a poll on our show Twitter. I just retweeted, but I'd love to hear from you. Which of these unique paths to the Stanley Cup final round is more intriguing to you? The Caps getting there after 20 years and many failures along the way, the Knights reaching the final in their inaugural season, or do you love both stories? Or maybe you're the Debbie Downer and neither one appeals to you. So that's the poll. That's from the brain of producer Tom. So you can check that out on Twitter. And you all are bombarding me with the best two-word phrases in sports. I didn't even know there were so many. I guess I didn't think this through. I was just going with Game 7 because that right away gives me a thrill. It gives me a little, when I think about a Game 7. Even though this is work, it doesn't feel as much like work when it's a Game 7. It's a winner-take-all, and you know there's going to be the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. We're inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. You're finding me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and there's also some pictures and a spot to weigh in on our Facebook page After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can send me your two-word phrases anywhere on the Facebook page. There's a visitor spot. There is a post up about hockey, but if you want to throw your phrases up there, that's completely fine. I like this one from Guy. Photo finish. Uh-huh. I mean, it only applies to a select number of sports, but when you think photo finish and you hear photo finish, you know that it's worth paying attention to.
Men who take the most selfies have higher levels of narcissism.
Hey, I took a selfie with my new friend Jack when I was on vacation, and it's awesome. I feel like it's someone else in the picture that makes my selfies good. If it's just me, they suck, and I suck at them. But when someone else takes the picture, or when there's someone else in the picture, or in this case, there's another being, there was a horse in the picture, the selfies turn out great.
Just absolutely suck.
I feel like that's universal, right? I mean, anybody's selfie of just themselves is kind of lame. But a selfie of something cool with you, now all of a sudden there's something to it.
Did you see my selfie with Jack the Palomino?
I did.
Oh my gosh. He's beautiful and he was tall. He was 18 hands tall at least. I had to have a step stool to get onto it. Of course, at the barns that I went to ride, they made everyone get on with a step stool. But there were horses that were a good 4 hands shorter than him. He was a monster.
Where are my oats?
He was so much fun. He was very playful. You know how, for those of you who have dogs or cats or any animal, really, I guess, they really enjoy having the top of their heads scratched or like their noses. So my dog loves it when I kind of rub or scratch in between her eyes on her nose and She's always rubbing her face on me. It's another thing that Aussies do all the time. You know, my dog does it all the time. She kind of headbutts me and rubs her face on me. That's what Jack the horse was doing. And so at the beginning, when I first met him, you know, you always rub the horse's long nose, and he was excited about that. And then when I turned away to talk to someone, one of the other riders, he started headbutting me and was like, "Hey, come back here.
Nobody trying to split us up."
Exactly. He was like, "Hey, I'm not done with you petting me over here." And then when we did a 2-hour trail ride. It was really neat. It was like through old low country plantations, some of them, you know, deserted now, but just gorgeous buildings and grounds, and then onto the beach, which I actually took a video of. I guess I could post it from the back of Jack. I was riding Jack at the time, and I got a video on the beach. Anyway, when we got done, you know, you get off the horse after 2 hours and while your legs are a little bit like jelly. And so I got done and I was just petting him and saying goodbye to him. And he started like headbutting me and rubbing his nose on me. And so not only did my shirt get completely dirty, it's like so dirty. But I was laughing so hard because he was practically knocking me over. It's a really strong horse. So all that to say that the selfie was awesome.
It sounds great. He was in a good mood. My only experience ever riding a horse, the horse was in such a bad mood. It was nipping everybody. It didn't want me on his back. The whole thing was pretty traumatizing.
Well, he did try to bite the horse behind us, so I had to keep him in line there. And also I liked about Jack that he refused to walk in line. So we were the last horse, other than the guide who was behind us on her horse, we were the last of the riders in line. And every time he had room on either side, he was not only attempting to steal a snack, but he was also getting out of line and just marching to the beat of his own drummer, which made me like him even more. Yeah, the first time I've ever ridden a Palomino, just gorgeous and fun and playful and love to stand in the water. So if you haven't seen the pictures, by the way, now that I'm talking about it, if you go to my Twitter page, they're right there off to the left, and it sounds like producer Tom just retweeted. I put up two pictures in one tweet. So the selfie, Jack is gorgeous. He steals the show, but he's looking right at the camera, which is so great. And then there's a picture that one of the guides took of me in the water, and Jack didn't want to leave the water. All the other horses were out and were back in line, and Jack's still hanging out in the water. So yeah, that was one of my highlights of vacation. Has nothing to do with sports, but it had to do with selfies. And I don't know why we were talking about those. It's After Hours.
Ladies, beware of men who take a lot of selfies.
Just don't make me laugh. I'm trying to be serious here. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So on Twitter, your best two-word phrases in sports, and also on our Facebook page where there are pictures, though, not selfies. So coming up on, is it Thursday? Is that what today is? Thursday morning now for a good portion of the United States? Not yet for Hawaii stragglers, but it is technically Thursday morning everywhere else. And so we revert back to the West in the NBA. And I did see this interesting headline, just it kind of jumped out at me. I haven't heard the audio. I know that Steph Curry and some others from the Warriors did press conferences, or at least, you know, spoke at practice. But I liked this word that was used to describe the Warriors. They're irked. That's a great verb right there. Irked. The fact that they lost after having a double-figure lead twice, but definitely a 12-point lead early in the fourth quarter. And the part that would drive me nuts if I was the Warriors, the fact that they shot so poorly in the fourth quarter at home when they had a chance to close it out. It was their worst shooting percentage of any quarter this season, 17% in the fourth quarter. They were 3 of 18. So even as LeBron James is talking about how everybody's a bit fatigued, that certainly stood out about the Warriors. Now, they were missing Andre Iguodala, and that was a major piece of it. But everybody is tired at this point in the year. Everybody's got bumps and bruises. And the Rockets used essentially six guys. They did get Gerald Green out there for 12 minutes maybe. But they were relying on six guys. And they were on the road. And they were already down double figures. And yet the Warriors managed just 12 points after putting 34 on the board in that third quarter where Steph Curry was going nutso.
You know, you shake it off.
You're going to have to. I kind of look at that stretch where Steph was on the bench. he started the fourth quarter, but then sat around the 10-minute mark and was out for 3 minutes or so. And that's kind of when the Rockets grabbed the momentum and seemed to really find their groove, right? So that's kind of, to me, felt like a turning point. All of the Warriors' offensive momentum slammed right into a brick wall when Steph sat down. And when he came back, he wasn't the same. So those two things really stood out to me about the fourth quarter. And so we'll see. They're ticked. In fact, Draymond Green used the phrase pissed off. It's not my favorite, but that's what he said, because we know we let one slip away. And so we'll see what they do on the road. They left San Francisco at the same time that the Rockets did. They both departed the Bay Area on Wednesday morning to get back to Houston. They went straight to practice when they landed in Houston, and they watched a bunch of film. Now, Coach has said we're in good spirits, but to hear Draymond talk about it, to hear Steph talk about it, to hear KD say, we missed an opportunity to go up 3-1, we're up 12. We'll see how much that motivates them. But also on the flip side, what did we hear out of Houston with Craig Ackerman? This is a legacy-defining win for this particular team. And I agree, I don't know if I'd go legacy-defining because they haven't won anything yet. But I agree that it was huge for them. It was massive to get their butts beat by 41 points in a game in which the second half almost didn't matter in game three, and then twice to be down by 12 points and to be, you know, to be on the ropes in game four on the road and still come back and win. To me, that showed incredible character and poise and veteran leadership for the Rockets. So do they continue the momentum, or do the Warriors now fight back as the champs that they are?
You happen to be in the way.
I mean, the Warriors are they're the tough out, right? They're the toughest out, not only because of their talent, but because they are the champs, and they've won two of the last three, and they've been to the NBA Finals three times in a row. And I said the same thing about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're the tough out. And so to knock the champ off the throne is always the biggest test. So we'll see. We'll see whether or not any of that momentum carries forward. For the Rockets, they had to withstand an early barrage from the Warriors in game one, and then also the third quarter, the first quarter of game four, and then the third quarter, which is always the best that Golden State plays. They're a third quarter team, which is not really a compliment, but they do very often create major separation in the third quarter. So the Rockets didn't have any hangover after that first spurt there, the 12-0 start. And it was the Warriors that couldn't carry the momentum forward. So these games are all individual packages. And what did Trevor Ariza say after game three? A loss is a loss, whether you lose by two or you lose by 200. So now who's got the edge? I don't actually know. This series is really hard to gauge. It's different than the Celtics and Cavaliers, where the home team has won every game, because Golden State and Houston each has won on the other's court. So that's coming up on Thursday night. Of course, we'll be back to talk about it. All right, your tweets are making me laugh. Brandon says, set hut. That's his favorite two-word phrase in sports. I wish we could turn Omaha into a two-word phrase, but it's just not. So you're finding me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page. I put it off as long as I can. I just don't really want it to ruin my buzz. It's a buzzkill, I feel like, to talk about the NFL on Wednesday, but I got to do it. So this is where we're kind of transition, and we'll talk about the new NFL anthem policy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Hut, hut.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Sorry, but I'm about to be a buzzkill. I don't want to do it any more than you probably want to hear about it, but it is a big story. And considering the second half of our show last night, I need to follow up on it. I am not surprised. I'll just say this really quickly before I talk about the new national anthem policy in the NFL. I'm not at all surprised that it's so emotional as well as critical for the owners to address it, because every single time it comes up, my Twitter is, it's a cesspool, and I'm just a radio host talking about it. And I do a really good job, if I do say so myself, at presenting all sides of the argument. I mean, I don't need you to agree with me. We don't all need to see it the same way. And I definitely think life is boring if we all have the same opinions. It's just that it's so emotional that people take their frustration out on me. And I'm just a freaking radio host, for heaven's sakes. I'm talking about it. I have nothing to do with it. And so I understand why the owners had such a hard time trying to figure out what to do and why they have such a visceral reaction to it, why it's so important to them, because the fans do the exact same thing. And it's a no-win situation, because no matter what you do, just like no matter what I say, I become a target. Well, no matter what these owners do or what the NFL does, there are going to be a lot of people who are unhappy or who are critical. And that's exactly what's happening. Even though the league came up with what they feel like is an option that will satisfy a lot of people, or at least give the teams and the players an out if they don't agree with the new policy, which kind of, I mean, I honestly think that the NFL is bending over backward to do what it can to accommodate. If you compare it to, say, the policy in the NBA or the NHL, where they have to stand and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, then the NFL is actually going out of its way to give players an option to continue to protest. They just don't want it done publicly on the field. Now, in my opinion, this policy is wishy-washy, all right? I understand why it's wishy-washy, but I still think it's wishy-washy. But the fact that it's unanimous approval by the owners means that they worked really hard to come up with something that they could all agree on. If you weren't listening last night, then you maybe didn't hear this. The owners spent hours and hours going around and around about the different options on Tuesday night. And then they went back on Wednesday and they spent more hours trying to figure out the right way to address the national anthem and a new policy if there was going to be one. So they tried really hard. And they decided to show a united front. And that doesn't happen very often with a bunch of really powerful people in one room. But they unanimously approved this new policy. And that speaks volumes to me, that they got to the point where they decided this was the best for their league. They tried really hard. You may not agree with the policy, but it was something they worked really hard on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. I'm going to allow the commissioner to break the news to you.
Clearly, our objective as a league and to all 32 clubs, which was unanimous, is that we want people to be respectful of the national anthem. We want people to stand. That's all personnel, and make sure that they treat this moment in a respectful fashion. That's something that we think we owe. We think that we've come up with a balanced process here and a procedure and policy that will allow those players who feel that they can't stand for the anthem to stay in the locker room. And there's no penalty for that, but we are going to encourage all of them to be on the field. We'd like all of them to be on the field and stand at attention.
So the commissioner, Roger Goodell, is saying, here's what we agreed on. And again, this was unanimous among the NFL owners, all 32 of them. And I'm assuming that includes the new one, David Tepper, who just bought the Carolina Panthers and was approved, would have been the day before. They are requiring anyone who's on the field to stand. So anybody who's out there, who's in front of the fans, who's going potentially to be captured on TV, they have to stand. And in the opinion of the NFL, both the owners and the commissioner, that is respectful enough. We expect you to stand. If you don't want to do that, so if there are still players, and last year it had dwindled to a very small percentage, if there are still players who do not want to stand for the national anthem, they have the option of staying in the locker room. And this definitely does put the onus on the players. Because if a player felt strongly enough in the past that he wanted to make his statement, and in the case of most of the players who did it, it was trying to bring attention to social injustice and social inequality, and this was their chosen method of protest. In the past, they were at least out there with their teammates. They weren't forced to choose between being apart from their teammates, literally walking off the field and back into the locker room and leaving their teammates behind. I mean, you got to think about how important the team concept is to these guys and how we very often hear the battle analogy. We're going war together and these are my brothers. So now the NFL is forcing these players to choose. Do I want to leave my team on the field and go back in the locker room and isolate myself as we prepare to come together for a big game and try to get a win? And you know, we're not talking about a 162-game season or an 82-game season. We're talking about 16 games. Every single one of these games is so important. And the teamwork concept and the togetherness, all of that is critical. So the NFL is saying to these guys, sure, you can protest if you like, but your protest has to be behind closed doors, meaning these players have to choose. And it's not this cut and dried, but I'm sure that this is an element to it. Choose between being part of a team, being with your guys, or leaving the field and going back in the locker room. Now, the reason why I feel like it's wishy-washy is because the NFL is, not the compromise is bad, but the NFL is essentially stopping short of making a policy where guys have to stand like the NBA does. And again, the NBA is very progressive. The commissioner, Adam Silver, is all about encouraging his guys to use their platforms for whatever political or social statements they want to make. There's no criticism inside the NBA, but they do require that you stand. So the NFL is saying, they're saying one thing, and I think their actions indicate something else. So they're saying, we still support you. We're giving you an out. We're allowing you to not stand for the national anthem. We just don't want it to be public. And to me, that's wishy-washy. To me, that feels like trying to please everyone. And I don't know. It's such a small percentage to me that I feel like they should have just left the policy alone. This is calling more attention to it than is necessary. It's making a bigger deal out of it than it needs to be. If you were going to change your policy, then change your policy. Be like the NBA, be like the NHL. Eventually it wouldn't have been a story anymore. But this to me actually calls more attention to it than is necessary. And the players are upset about it for a couple of reasons. So I saw a bunch of quotes and heard different guys, and I'll let you hear from owners and coaches and players, a hodgepodge after our break. But they're frustrated because they feel like the players weren't considered. Though, to be fair, the NFL did do a couple of different forums where they tried to get the input of players, including like a guy like Malcolm Jenkins, who had been really, really strong in not only communicating his reasons why he was protesting, but in also trying to call attention in his community to the reasons why this was so important to him. So he's been really strong and been a leader on the forefront of this. So the NFL has listened to players in the past, but that was one thing you heard from players on Wednesday when the new policy was announced was, hey, why didn't they come to us? Why didn't they consult the Players Association? Damaris Smith, as usual, is critical of the NFL. And these two sides, they couldn't be farther apart. But the other thing you heard was from the players, why go to such lengths when you're talking about a very small percentage of guys who are still kneeling during the anthem or still protesting during the anthem? To me, it feels like it's trying to please everyone. And in the end, I don't know what difference it makes. Obviously the NFL is a business, so it can establish policies for its employees, and the employees don't necessarily get a say. I mean, that's what most of us go through on a regular basis as employees. I don't get any impact or any input on CBS company policies. I just have to sign them if I want to work here. I have to abide by them if I want to work here. So for most of us, that's reality. We don't get an input on employer policies, company policies, business policies. We just have to agree with them or we don't work where we work. So that part, I don't know that bothers me as much. But the idea that the NFL is trying to please everyone and trying to find some way to be more advertising friendly and to not ruffle as many feathers, and they're worried about their advertisers. Just, yeah, it kind of felt like this solution that didn't really please anyone, but that was the whole goal, was to just make everybody happy. And it's impossible in a world that we live in, but it's also impossible when you're talking about the number of fans and the number of people who follow the NFL. You're never going to make everybody happy. Yeah, it's a little bit like what the NFL does on a regular basis. They are worried about they're worried about what the rhetoric is going to be. They're worried about what people are going to say about their league. They're worried about how it affects the bottom line, as opposed to actually making a policy that they feel like is the best for their corporation. I'd love to hear your feedback. There is more, though. There's Mike Zimmer, there's Jimmy Haslam, there's Tyrod Taylor, there's Jed York. There's Art Rooney. Let you hear some of the feedback following the policy from inside the NFL. And then you too.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
All 32 clubs want to make sure that during the moment of the anthem and the flag, that is a very important moment to all of us as a league, as clubs, personally, and to our country. And that's a moment that we want to make sure is done in a very respectful fashion. And that was something that was very strongly held in the room.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I know it bothers a lot of people that the protest that some of the NFL players have chosen to do in the past during the national anthem gets turned into or gets interpreted as a sign of disrespect. I've said this over and over again. The players can only control their actions. If they choose to kneel during the anthem as a sign of protest of social inequality and social injustice, they can control that part of it. They can't control what the reaction is. And yes, very often, the majority of the time, the focus has been on when they've chosen to protest, not what they're protesting. It's been about the national anthem and the flag as opposed to the social injustice that they want to call attention to. And as I hear Roger Goodell speak about the respect for the anthem and how important that was to 32 clubs, that's what I hear. But again, the players can only control their actions. They can't control the actions or the reactions of the people who are watching, the fans who are watching. And there's been a major disconnect there. And I know that bothers a lot of people, especially those people who support the right to protest and feel like this should be something that these athletes can do if they want to. But you can't force someone to hear what you're saying, to see what you're protesting. You can't force people to interpret it the way you want them to. I mean, we're all human beings. It's a right to protest. It's a right that the NFL has preserved, though, in a different way now. But they can't force fans to see what they see or to understand what they're doing. I mean, that's an exercise in futility. But there certainly are people who are paying more attention or who are more aware because of the small minority of NFL players who have protested by kneeling during the anthem or sitting during the anthem in the past. All right, so maybe even if you only reach one person or two people or three people, would it still be worth it? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. I'll try to squeeze in some calls here before we get to the top of the hour, but I wanted you to hear from some of the others inside the NFL fraternity. So Roger Goodell says it was unanimous and that it was something that all the owners could agree to. And I think that was a big deal. They went around and around and around and around. They put a bunch of different options on the table, but they wanted to have a show of unity. And so in the end, they decide this was the way that they could compromise. Now, I feel like it's kind of wishy-washy, but Jimmy Haslam, who's the owner of the Browns, says this was the right move.
I think throughout this process, all of us as owners in the league, Roger and the NFL, have grown much closer to our players as we work through this process. I know we've been actively involved in Ohio in several areas of criminal justice reform and have gotten our players involved, too, in helping them understand the political process and helping to cause change. And I think the solution that we have come up with is a good one.
So Haslam is saying, you know, we're doing a lot of work outside of the public eye. We're doing a lot of work when the TV cameras aren't on the field and on the flag and on the anthem on Sundays or Thursdays or Mondays. And that I appreciate. It's why I admire Malcolm Jenkins so much. He didn't just protest. He didn't just kneel or, you know, raise a fist or make a statement when the public was watching. He also has gone into the communities in South Philadelphia, I think it is, and he's met with law enforcement and he's tried to figure out ways to fix the injustice and to address the problems. And so Jimmy Haslam is saying we've done the same thing too in Cleveland. Jed York of the San Francisco 49ers said, okay, this is one piece of it. We're focused on the progress, though. We want to see progress. And you hear that. You hear that from players. You hear that from owners, which I appreciate. Some people got really upset in tweets to me on Wednesday and said if the NFL would try to help, this process would be accelerated, addressing social injustice. Well, then it would go more quickly. But don't forget, the NFL's committed, was it close to $10 million toward the different programs and the different initiatives that are important to these players. And that's why Malcolm Jenkins has said moving forward that he will not protest anymore during the national anthem, because he believes that the NFL is taking a valuable step and is putting its money where its mouth is. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes, whether it be individual players, whether it be teams, whether it be franchises themselves. It's not just about the protest. And I know that it bothers the NFL and the owners wanted to come up with a unified front, but there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes. So again, if one person is reached, if two people are reached, if four hearts are changed and five minds are changed, then it wasn't in vain. And there's a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort going into actually taking steps and making it better. It's not just about the protest, but of course, that's the part that so many people focus on. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio and CBSSportsRadio.com. Just wanted you to hear from Mike Zimmer, too, because he's a coach. He represents a different group. He obviously wasn't part of these meetings. But again, you get this kind of unified front from at least those people who are speaking out.
I was proud of my team last year. They stood for the anthem. I think it's important that we stand for the anthem. You know, I think it's important that we represent our country the right way, the flag the right way. You know, a lot of people have, and I probably shouldn't get on a tangent, right? But a lot of people have died for that flag, and that flag represents our country and what we stand for. And so I think that's important. And I'll stop there.
And so you're hearing from Coach Zimmer something else that's really important is, and I hear this from some veterans too, not all, but, you know, some veterans saying it's about the flag. It's not really about the anthem. It's about the flag that you see on the uniform of the guy next to you when you're in combat or when you're overseas. It's the flag that keeps you going, understanding and recognizing that you are serving for what that flag represents. So sometimes it's not about the anthem. To a lot of people, it's actually about the flag. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I will get to your calls, I promise, and I thank you for your tweets. Oh, this one, and I was going to mention this, but Kevin did it on Twitter. The Jets owner said his players are free to protest. He's willing to pay whatever fines result. And so that is true. And so there are owners that while they're showing unified front, they're also saying if my guys choose still to protest and they want to do it on the field and they want to go against the grain and risk the wrath of the NFL and risk fines, then I'm not going to stop them. So yeah, we'll see how it plays out. It's definitely something that will get a lot more attention because it's not been let go, right? The NFL's made a big deal out of it in this offseason. All right, before we hit the top of the hour, I have to say I was wrong, and I was wrong in a major way, and it bothers me that I was so wrong. So this is my attempt to say I'm sorry. Um, I no doubt there are going to be people that think this is not good enough, but it's the best I can do. When Reuben Foster of the San Francisco 49ers was charged with two felonies in domestic violence, different domestic violence charges, I was very vocal about what the San Francisco 49ers should do. I believe they should cut him right away. I didn't say that when he was charged. I'm sorry, I didn't say that when he was accused. I said it when he was charged with the felonies. And I didn't think that the team needed to wait or should wait until the legal process played out. And if I had been in charge of the Niners, if it had been me, I would have made the wrong decision because all of the charges have been dropped against Foster. His, I don't know if it's still his girlfriend, but the woman who accused him has now admitted that she got her injuries in a fight, in a road rage incident, and that she was upset because Foster was going to break up with her over this incident, this road rage incident, and so she threatened to ruin his career. And so Foster has been cleared now. There is a gun charge. I think it's been reduced to a misdemeanor, but the judge has said there's insufficient evidence and has dropped the two felony charges. So I was wrong, and I looked at what I thought was evidence, though circumstantial, and I jumped to a conclusion. And again, if it had been me and I would have been in charge of the 49ers, now they did keep him out of workouts, but they didn't cut him. I would have taken that extra step and I would have had to apologize. And so in this particular case, I know every case is different and this isn't how it works out the majority of the time, but I recognize that I have to apologize and say I was sorry because I prejudged Reuben Foster and judged the San Francisco 49ers for not taking what I felt like was a stronger stand in the case of these two felony charges of domestic violence. So because I was so vocal about it then, I'm telling you I was wrong now, and I am apologizing for that. Thanks for tuning in. We got 1 hour left to go. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.